Best-selling author and humorist David Sedaris will be making his Tanglewood debut on Sunday night at 8 p.m. in The Shed. He's celebrating the release of his new book, Theft by Finding, Diaries 1977 to 2002. In addition to the new book, Sedaris is the author of Barrel Fever and Holidays on Ice, as well as collections of personal essays, Naked, Me Talk Pretty One Day, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, When You Are Engulfed in Flames, and Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. He is one of our favorite guests, and we welcome David Sedaris to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I always appreciate your company.
Hi, Joe. I'm back at you.
Very nice to have you. Very nice to have you at Tanglewood. Has it been something that you thought that you would like to do these outdoor places like Tanglewood and Wolf Trap and the like?
Well, I went to Wolf Trap a couple of years ago, and it was the first time I'd ever been there. And I'd said, oh, I don't know about that, because it sounds, you know, I don't like doing things that are outdoors. But then it didn't feel outdoorsy to me. You know, when I was at Wolf Trap, I don't know, I'm just, I was looking at people, but I couldn't see people milling around. Maybe it was the way it was designed. They were, I don't know, they were behind the top riser or something, and I just didn't notice it. And I've never been to Tanglewood before, but I have a friend named Dawn who I had dedicated the book to, and I was saying to her not long ago, I said, I'm going to do a show in Massachusetts. I said, at a place that's outdoors and it starts with an S, and I can't remember the name of it, but it starts with an S, and what is it? What is it? And she said, Tanglewood? And I said, no, sweet, sweet Tanglewood. So that's what I call it, sweet, sweet Tanglewood. So it'll be my first trip to sweet, sweet Tanglewood.
Do you have a clear understanding as to what you dislike about the outdoors and performing outdoors?
Well, it's just distracting I don't like to be able to see anything, right? Usually when I do a reading, I'm in a theater and the lights are out, and so I can't see what people are doing. I can't see them sleeping. I can't see them texting. I can't see them yawning or turning to their friend and saying, can we leave now? Or whatever it is that they're doing. But when you go on a book tour, then the lights don't go down and you see all of that. And then when it's an outdoor venue, you see that. I mean, when I was at Wolf Trap, it wasn't dark, so I could see people's faces. So I just don't like to see people's faces, and I don't think that they like being seen either. I think when you know that someone's looking at you, then your face forms that rictus of appreciation, and it's just exhausting. But when it's completely dark and you know that the person on stage can't see you, then you react however you react. But you don't have to be self-conscious about it.
Does it play with your head in the sense that if you see someone grimace or if you see a reaction on someone's face that it can give you a momentary pause?
Oh, definitely. I don't know why it doesn't work. Like if I see somebody clearly enjoying himself, that has no effect on me. But if I see somebody looking at his watch, then I hate myself as much as he hates me. I'm such a baby that way. And if somebody walks out, I tell myself it's a doctor on call. And then if some other more people walk out, then I think, oh, there was like a bus accident. And all the doctors in town are being summoned. I'm so fascinated by people who embrace sort of the read Twitter, read the comments that people post about them on Twitter or go online and read negative things that people say. I'm so fascinated by that. I'm just such a baby that way. I have a life to lead, and I think you too, you make a choice. You either get involved in all of that or you lead some kind of a life.
Well, that brings up two points. One is that I've seen you many, many, many times, and I've never seen like hordes of people going for the door. It seems to be a very rare occurrence that people get up and leave. But also the fact when you're talking about social media, do you find it disturbing if somebody takes out a camera or their phone and snaps a picture of you while you're reading? That would seems like that would also be a little disturbing.
You know, it's, I can't bear that. And then they always make an announcement. And it's interesting to me. Like when I was on my book tour, because again, on the book tour, you could see everything. So I was outdoors. A bookstore had set up a lot of chairs in the parking lot. And so I was out in the parking lot and the person who introduced me said, no pictures, no pictures. And then I start reading and then I see these people taking pictures. And I never want to stop for any reason. If you're reading something out loud and you stop to confront somebody, that's a live confrontation. So it's infinitely more interesting than whatever you've got written on a piece of paper because it's volatile and it's live.
Right.
So if you stop and you say, oh, don't do that, or then there's no point continuing. So I don't continue, but I do look at them and they see me noticing them doing it. And I'm always so surprised by the look on their face. I guess I just wonder, you know, in England where I live now, at Paddington Station, the train station, they have a rule that you can't bring any suitcases on the escalator, right? And I'm thinking, I'm not going to let go of my suitcase. I think that's a stupid rule. I'm not going to lose the grip on my suitcase. And then I think, damn it, I'm going to take my suitcase on the escalator. But then I think, no, it's the rule, and it's a rule they made up, and it's important to them. So instead, I carry my suitcase up the stairs, right, cursing the entire time. But it's the rule. But I always think, how is that different than me taking a picture? If they said, don't take a picture, and then I say, well, it doesn't matter, I'll take a picture anyway, how is it any different? So I carry my suitcase, and I think about that, and I curse. I look like a fool.
So here are two things I want to bring up. One is that I'll be introducing you on Sunday, so I assume you want me to mention, please, no pictures.
But that'd be great.
But if you want, I will also just, eyeball the crowd and tell people to stop so you don't have to.
Oh, that'd be great. Well, because my sister suggested that I just tell people that I'm a warlock, and so I won't show up in pictures, so there's no point. That would be the greatest superpower, I think, just to not show up in pictures.
That would be great. Well, do you feel that, are you a person that when you see a picture of yourself, you just automatically don't like it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't look at them. I needed some pictures taken for publicity for the book or something. And so I have a dear friend who's an artist and a photographer. Her name is Ingrid Christie, and she lives in England. Mm-hmm. And we're very close, and she came over to my house, and she must have taken 50 pictures. And then she said to me, let me show you the ones that I think are the best. And I said, oh, no, I don't care to see them. And I never looked at any of the pictures that she took. Sometimes I'll ask Hugh, you know, will you pick one, pick a picture? But no, I don't. Again, I think it's just that I have a life to lead. And if I have to worry about, you know, if I have to worry about what I look like, then it's going to take away from, I don't know, some other aspect that needs more attention than that, I suppose. I mean, that said, I mean, I don't know if it's a midlife crisis, a late midlife crisis. I mean, I'm 60, so I think that's too late for a midlife crisis. I don't know what we call the particular crisis.
A crisis.
I'm going through, but I decided a while ago that if I'm going to be standing in front of people, then I need to be wearing ridiculous clothing. Ridiculous. But the sad thing is, I think I look fantastic. Fantastic. And these clothes cost a fortune, but no one would ever guess because they look like I made them myself. And I've never made a garment and I have no idea how to sew.
Now, give us an example of what you would consider to be a ridiculous outfit.
Well, I was having a little asking my sisters for their opinion, just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I have a jacket, and it's blue. It's like baby blue, cotton sport coat. And it looks like you ripped the lining out of it, and the lining is hanging in tatters, almost to my knee. And with them, I either wear a pair of trousers that look exactly like pajama bottoms. Exactly. Except they cost $400 on sale. And they have a zippered fly, whereas pajamas don't have a zippered fly. No. I point that out to everybody. They're not pajama bottoms. Or a pair of culottes that are baby blue and striped that look like a skirt, but they're not. They're culottes.
Do you find comfort in this wardrobe?
I just think I look great, and I want a jacket.
Who cares then? As long as you think you look great.
I'm doing a show at Royal Festival Hall, 3 shows in a few weeks, and so I bought a jacket, and it's made from 2 jackets sewn together, like. Just 2 jackets cut in half and then sewn together. And then with them, I wear a pair of trousers that are made from 8 pairs of trousers cut up and sewn together.
So now you have me wondering what I possibly should wear going on stage just before you do.
But I always thought, you know, if you're going to be on stage, you need to make a little effort.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Get dressed up and... So I've always done that, but it's just been the past couple of years. I don't know. I've just thought, well, because it would be one thing, you know, we're going out. I'm on the coast of North Carolina right now. And so we're going to meet this fellow for dinner at this place on the pier that serves hamburgers, right? So I'm not going to wear my crazy clothes there. I wish I had the nerve, but I don't. Because you don't always, you know, you don't always want to be stared at. But if you're going to be on stage, people are staring at you anyway.
Right.
It just helps you hold people's gaze, really. It helps you hold their attention.
And if they've paid money, put on a show. Put on a good outfit and
exactly.
Go to town. Sure.
Exactly.
As far as what people can expect, you're obviously going to be celebrating the new book. Congratulations, by the way, a wonderful bestseller, and it's a beautiful book. What will you be reading anything from that, or will you be doing new work?
Oh, I might read a few little things from that, but I've been keeping a diary for 40 years. And so this is just the book that came out was 1977 to 2002 diary entries, not the entire diary, but maybe it's one thousandth of my diary. Because most of my diary is not of interest, even to me, really, but I'm just compelled to write everything down every day. So I'll read a little bit from that. But then I have a new story that I'm working on that I probably read. I have some new things that I've written.
If we were to go back in your diary, not the one that's published, but to go back in your diary, let's say you yourself were going to go back and look at your diary, would you be able to find the time in your life when you started to make the decision that you wanted to change your wardrobe on stage? Does it get that specific?
Yeah. I mean, it gets specific to, I was in Japan, and I went to a store that they have the store in New York, but I was too intimidated to go into it in New York, so I went into it in Japan. And I remember the first thing I bought there was, it looks like a business shirt, except it has huge buttons on it. But other than that, it just looks normal, like a business shirt.
So how huge are we?
And then I went and bought a shirt that looks like it's got a long kind of 70s collar on it, which is sort of creepy, but it looks filthy. And I don't mean it looks filthy like, oh, you were doing a little gardening. It looks like you buried your father. And then 6 months later, you said, you know, I wouldn't mind having that shirt. And you dug him up, and you put the shirt on without washing it. I mean, it looks like pus stains on the shirt. It looks like filth, and it's... And the long collar makes it just a little bit creepier than it already was. And then from then on, I just started going to that store all the time.
Are you at the point now where designers and stores that know that you like this kind of clothing now will kind of cater to you and say, oh, you may be interested in this?
No, because I'm not really the person they want wearing their clothing. I think most places would pay me not to wear their clothes. but I am at the point where, and I guess I've been here for quite a while, where, you know, sometimes you see like a mentally ill homeless person on the street who's wearing a sweater wrapped around his waist like a skirt and has maybe made a turban out of a bath towel and has on 3 different shirts and 2 different pairs of socks. And I look at that person and I think, he looks good.
I could pull that off? Is that what you think?
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to your appearance at Tanglewood, making your Tanglewood debut Sunday night at 8
sweet,
o'clock.
Sweet Tanglewood.
Sweet Tanglewood. That's right. Sweet Tanglewood. You can, I'm just going to say this once, it's tanglewood.org, because if you put in sweet Tanglewood, God only knows what you'll get online. Tanglewood.org for more information. And David Sedaris will be at Sweet Tanglewood on Sunday night at 8 o'clock. I am honored to do the introduction, and I can't wait to see you, sir. It's always a pleasure, and I thank you very much.
I'll see you then. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the new book is Theft by Finding, Diaries, 1977 to 2002. More information of David Sedaris at Tanglewood on Sunday night, tanglewood.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.